the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, last weekend erupted in an uproar over taxes. It was revealed that presidential candidate Donald Trump lost over more than $900 million in 1995. The implication was it was some kind of a tax scheme, and he may not have had to pay taxes for the next 18 to 20 years. Joining me on the program is Alan Cole. He's an economist with the Center for Federal Tax Policy at the Tax Foundation. Alan, let's get into what we know about the New York Times article, because it's my understanding they didn't have the entire tax return. But let's talk about the facts as we know them.
Right. What the New York Times was mailed was just a few state tax returns and just the first page of each of those. So there's very little in the way of detail. It's just kind of a 30,000-foot overview of Donald Trump's finances. And there you see him carrying over this tremendously large loss from previous years. But that's all we really know.
Now, I guess maybe it was the size of the loss. As I understand it, it was a net operating loss of $915,729,000. Now, that's a huge amount of money. But if we put that into the context of what was going on during that period of time, we had just gone through the S&L crisis. Real estate was hit hard during that recession and during that crisis. So it wasn't unusual, and given the size of his net worth, that he would have some large losses given the properties that he owned. So why don't we begin with the rules of a net operating loss, because it's being portrayed as some kind of devious tax scheme, which it is not. Can you maybe give us a little insight what it is, why it's on the books, why it's used so often by so many businesses and individuals in this country, and why Congress put this in place?
A net operating loss is a pretty basic concept in tax policy, and what it has to do with is businesses that lose money some of the time, but make money other times. And that's actually quite a few businesses. We base our tax system on calendar years, and during a calendar year, it's very possible that a business would lose money. And one thing about years is that they're kind of an arbitrary unit of time. If you imagine a business that loses money in June and makes money in July, obviously, because of the way our tax system works, they add those together. Well, a net operating loss allows you to do the same thing for a business that loses money in December of one calendar year and then makes money in January of the next calendar year. It allows them to smooth out their income over time. And the way we do this is we let you carry forward or carry back losses. We let you carry the losses back up to 3 years and carry them forward up to 15 years for 18 years total. So that's where the New York Times got the number of 18 years from. But there are some good reasons to be skeptical that over all of those 18 years, Donald Trump paid no tax.
Well, I mean, we know from what he said, at least publicly, we don't have his tax returns, but he made over $600 million last year and $300-something million the year before. So that would have eaten up this $900 million loss. One can assume, given his net worth from 1995 to where he is now, 20-something years later, obviously, he probably made profit during that period of time. What should have been stated in the article, at least in my opinion, is that the way the net operating loss works, as you just stated, you carry back 3 years and you carry forward 15. But also, I want to point out, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners may not know, a lot of companies do this because we also have something called the economic cycle. So you can take a large company like General Motors or Ford that may do very well selling cars in an economic recovery, but may lose billions of dollars in an economic downturn. So if Ford made, you know, $5 billion 1 year in an economic recovery, but the economy goes into recession and they lose $2 billion, that's exactly where this net operating loss works.
Absolutely. And what we know of the years 1989 to 1991, approximately, is that there was a big recession during those years. And that hit Donald Trump particularly hard. because he had just made a bunch of leveraged investments in casinos and luxury properties. And those are the sorts of things that you'd expect to be suffering particularly much during the recession, because he's borrowed and he's trying to make money and make those interest payments. And all of that was poorly timed, and it probably resulted in some very large losses. But there's also ways that those net operating losses can be wiped out pretty quickly. One of those is just making money again during the boom times of the 1990s. And another of those is if some bad debt from those bad investments in the late 1980s and early 90s, if those debts were forgiven, that would count as income too. So it could be very possible that that net operating loss actually got eliminated pretty quickly. We just don't know at this point because we don't have enough information.
It's rather interesting because it just wasn't Donald Trump. For example, it was reported on the Clintons' tax return for 2015 that the Clintons had a $700,000 net operating loss. And by the way, the New York Times, which made $30 million last year, had a $3.6 million refund because they had lost money for several years. So this is a very common practice, but that's not the way it was portrayed in the press. It was portrayed in the press like this was some kind of a nefarious kind of tax scheme that is rare. When I think in your article, you pointed out, I think if I'm reading this correctly, in the year 2014, 1.2 million taxpayers reported net operating losses on their federal tax return. And more importantly, since 1995, when net operating losses for the country was $49 billion, it's closer to $200 billion today. So this is something that's done all the time and very common, not some nefarious tax scheme that is rare.
Right. A loss itself is a very, very ordinary tax accounting concept. Maybe if you look into the details, you might find something that you don't like in his tax filing. But we don't have the broader tax returns yet. And instead, people are just looking at this large loss and speculating about it. Net operating losses are absolutely very common things. Usually they're not this large, which is why it's gotten as much attention as it has. But there's nothing about the concept of losses in itself that should arouse suspicion.
You deal with tax policy at the Tax Foundation, and how long has this policy been in effect? Because we do live in a capitalistic society, Ellen, and we encourage businesses to start up. I mean, that's what makes this country great, and I assume that in Congress, the idea behind the net operating loss is they would rather lose a taxpayer than lose a business, which creates jobs.
Right. Operating losses have been around in the tax code for at least as far as I know. It's just an ordinary thing in income taxes. In fact, we've just did a survey of all of the OECD countries on their tax systems, and all of them have some degree of loss carry forward and carry back. So this isn't a pure, either in the sense that very few people use it or in the sense that just the U.S. has it. It's a feature of income taxes worldwide.
So it's not just here in the U.S., but it's also elsewhere. And we also have things that can help a lot of people. For example, Trump, the majority of his net worth is in real estate. And I do know from real estate investing that if you buy a piece of property, whether it's an apartment complex, it could be a hotel, commercial building, you get to depreciate part of that building each year, which shelters a portion of your rents. That's also common and been around for a long time as well, has it not?
Yes, that's the ordinary feature of most income tax codes as well. The general idea is that if you're taxing someone's business income, it should be about their revenues minus their expenses. And what we do for things like buildings is that we amortize the expenses over several years. And you get a deduction for it each year until eventually you've taken all the deductions for the building. And that's how we do it. And that's really been around for decades for essentially the entirety of the income tax as well.
I want to move to another area that I'm sure you're familiar with, and that is foundations, Ellen, because both Clinton and Trump have foundations. Warren Buffett has a foundation. Bill Gates has a foundation. Most wealthy people, once they get to a certain level of wealth, you know, from a planning perspective, we see this used once a person's net worth goes over $50 million. Foundations are also used as a means of protecting the estate or one means of getting tax deductions. But what can you tell us about foundations? Because there are a lot of them. You can't watch a PBS program and not read the various foundations that were gave grants or some kind of thing to PBS. What can you tell us about foundations?
Well, the first thing about them from a tax policy perspective and the main feature of interest is that if you can create a nonprofit that fits within the IRS specifications, which are pretty broad, you can get itemized tax deductions for your donations to that foundation. What that sort of means is if you donate $1,000 to your foundation and you would be taxed at the top rate of 39.6%, then really for every $1,000 that you're giving to your foundation, you get $396 in tax pay. So it's never going to be a scheme to make money, but it does let purchases go through your foundation rather than through your normal after-tax money. It makes them cheaper, all things considered, because you get to take the tax deduction for it. And the question then with foundations is whether they're being used appropriately. Because I think when people envision the deduction for charitable expenses, they're thinking soup kitchens and stuff. And I'm sure that to some degree, these foundations are doing soup kitchen-like work, you know, helping with public health and that kind of thing. But if through your charitable foundation, you're actually employing an employee who's maybe around for political purposes or around to render like personal services to the rest of your estate, that would be a misuse of the 501c3 or a misuse of the charitable deduction.
Why is it, do you think? Is it just because of the size of wealth? I mean, growing up and when I first got in this business as a financial planner, I became aware of foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, Carnegie Foundation. A lot of the great wealth in this country were individuals amassed enormous amounts of wealth. A good majority of it went into foundations, which are now doing public good.
Right. The culture of philanthropy is important. And it's done a lot of good. Most of the great universities these days seem to be named for someone or other who just donated a lot of money to found them. But there does need to be some degree of accountability if they're going to get tax breaks. If they're not going to get tax breaks, then you can kind of do whatever you want. But if we're going to give people those $396 back for every $1,000 they donate to their foundation, well, in that case, it would be good to check up on it and make sure it's doing work that we actually think is appropriate for a nonprofit to get tax deductions.
And so when money is donated to a foundation, let's say, you know, I'm Larry, lots of bucks. I've got a tremendous amount of wealth, either in real estate or stock, or I sold my business. I own a lot of stock. I donate that to the foundation. Number one, I get a deduction for it. If I can't deduct all the tax deductions up front, I know I can carry that forward. When assets are in a foundation, the foundation does not pay any tax. So there's no tax on dividends. There's no tax on interest. There's no tax on capital gains. Are you familiar, Alan, with the requirements that foundations, I mean, how much money do they have to give? So let's say I have a foundation and I have $100 million in that foundation. Is there a requirement each year that I must give X amount of dollars to remain as a foundation?
I don't know the specific requirements for 501c3s and all of their attributes. That's a little bit beyond the area that I usually talk about. But there are accountants and lawyers who are quite familiar with it. And obviously, my own organization is a 501c3. And I know we do pay attention to that kind of thing.
So I guess the gist of this story is when the story broke last weekend, there was a big uproar and it was portrayed that somehow Mr. Trump had come up with this nefarious scheme to not pay taxes for 18 years. And I guess from your article, what I picked up is these net operating losses, number one, are widely used in this country. I mean, anybody that's taken an accounting course, a 101 course, knows what a net operating loss is. And it's been around, and it's part of a sound tax policy because the government does want companies and understands the business cycle that, you know, it's just the nature of business. You can do well one year, and the next year you can lose money. I mean, we're in the markets, and every corporate earnings season, you get companies that disappoint, they lose money for various reasons. It could be the economy, it could be product launch, it could be anything, but it's very, very common, I guess, is the thing that I picked up from reading your article, and there's nothing nefarious about it.
Absolutely. There's no evidence of any wrongdoing from the information that the Times has by itself. Instead, you need to take a broader look at what's going on and have a little bit more in terms of documents in order to make a determination one way or another.
Well, listen, Alan, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. Keep up the good work at the Tax Foundation, which advises Congress on tax policy. I appreciate you coming on the program.
Absolutely.
Well, that concludes my interview with Alan Cole. He's from the Tax Foundation, which is an independent organization that advises Congress on tax policy. It's really amazing what is being done here in the ignorance of the media when they report these things, because I was watching the news last weekend and I saw this. I have a master's degree in accounting. And so when you look at this thing and you think, what the heck are these guys talking about? This is just ordinary business. And thank goodness we have those in Congress on both sides of the aisle that recognize something called the business cycle and that companies lose money. How many times have you picked up a newspaper or watched the evening news and heard about some company that started up or some company missed their earnings and they lost a lot of money, billions of dollars? It could be a lawsuit. It could be a write-off of a bad business, takeover. I mean, this is just commonplace. And it happens all the time. And thank goodness, at least those in Congress, but I thought it was disingenuous to present this as some kind of nefarious tax scheme when it's nothing more than just an accounting ledger. It's basically you lose money, well, you get to deduct it. It's the same thing when you buy and sell stocks. You buy a stock at $10 a share. It doesn't work out. You sell it at $7 a share. You have a loss. And you get to deduct up to $3,000 of that loss against your income. Any loss you don't use up, you can carry forward. And it's the same thing with businesses with net operating losses. In the meantime, well, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. We are going to be covering some tax issues in the weeks ahead. We'll talk about some tax laws that went into effect this year, things that you should be considering towards the end of the year if you want to reduce those taxes. We'll be covering that in the weeks ahead because you want to do your tax planning now, what's left of the year, because we only have less than 3 months. In the meantime, until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.